This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
For this economic relations to thrive, you also need to frame them within an atmosphere of peace and security.
That was Bashir Adanai, acting Comptroller General of the Nigeria Customs Service, on the closure of the border with Niger. Details coming up. Also, Tunisia and Libya aim to expand trade, and we take a look ahead at Zimbabwe's elections. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Young migrants continue to make perilous journeys by boat from West Africa in search of better opportunities in Europe. Most recently, off the coast of Cape Verde, dozens of Senegalese migrants may have died after their boat capsized. Life-threatening journeys like these continue to persist, but for those who survive such disasters and return to the continent, what happens next? VOA's Anthony Labruto has more.
More than 60 people are feared dead after a boat carrying mostly Senegalese migrants capsized off the coast of Cape Verde. Senegal's foreign ministry says the boat set sail on July 10th with 101 passengers aboard. It says 38 people were rescued on Tuesday, though it is not clear when the vessel capsized. Filomena Goncalves is the Cape Verde health minister.
It comes with a lot of pain, yes, but we know that migration issues are global issues which require international cooperation, a lot of discussion and global strategy. Given what the world is going through right now with migration issues, it means that we all the nations, have to sit down at the table and see what we can do so that we don't lose more lives at sea above all.
West African migrants, mostly young men aged 18 to 35, are persistent in trying to get to Europe for better jobs and education. But survivors of an event like this often end up right back where they started. Alioune Fall hopes to change that. As president of Sama Chance, a migrant reintegration organization in Senegal, he is one of the first people that would-be migrants encounter once they come back to Senegal.
All the migrants we help are young people between 25 or 30, 34 or 14. They don't have a job. They don't have any qualification to do something.
Recently, Fall's organization helped 10 migrants rescued off the coast of Spain return to their communities.
We take them to the airport, bring them in our house of Dalajam. They stay here, they stay there during one month. We give them food, help, and help them to be very good and have a body.
Many of the young men Fall helps wanted to work temporarily in Europe so they can provide for their communities once they return home.
They bring in Senegal much money. They can build a project. They can build a house. They can take a wife. They can help many people in the country.
For Fall's organization, helping migrants when they need it most is key to helping them build long-term success for Senegal's future.
Before you have, first you have to be. Before have money, to have money, to have job, first you have to be. So to be good in your health, good in your mind, it is easy to make a job or as a business.
The Atlantic migration route West Africa to the Canary Islands, typically used by those trying to reach continental Europe, is one of the world's deadliest, with summer being the busiest period of travel. Anthony Labruto, VOA News, Washington.
West African military chiefs today have been discussing a possible armed intervention to reverse last month's coup d'etat in Niger. Their two-day meeting in Ghana will end tomorrow when the defense commanders are expected to announce any next steps. Alarmed by a series of military takeovers in the region, the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has agreed to activate a standby force to restore constitutional order in Niger. ECOWAS demands that Niger's coup leaders release President Mohamed Bazoum, warning that the bloc could send in troops if negotiations fail. The United Nations, as well as Russia and the United States, have urged a diplomatic solution to the crisis. ECOWAS has applied trade and financial sanctions, while France, Germany, and the United States have suspended aid programs. Germany today said it wants the EU to impose sanctions on coup leaders. Jihadist insurgencies have gripped Africa's Sahel region for more than a decade, breaking out in northern Mali in 2012 before spreading to neighboring Niger and Burkina Faso in 2015. The violence and instability has led to coup d'etats in Mali and Burkina Faso. Trade between Nigeria and Niger has been halted because of sanctions due to Niger's July coup. In Nigeria, officials say they could lose over $200 million in export trade. That's causing some economic hardship for many communities on the border. Al-Hassan Bala reports from the border town of Magama, Jibia, Nigeria.
For 2 weeks, Bilia Issa has been one of many drivers forced to park their trucks loaded with goods in Magama, Jibia, Nigeria, near the border with Niger. The continued border closure is due to sanctions imposed on Niger by the international community and the regional bloc, the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, because of Niger's July coup. Nigerian officials say the closure could result in losses of $226 million. Issa says that he has spent almost 15 days at the border and that the commodities he carries will spoil if the closure extends into next month. It will be a huge loss for both him and the owner. He says that he has no money and that friends are providing him with food. The usual bustle in this community has been hindered by the insecurity in Niger and the sanctions that followed. Abdulkadir Sani is a shop owner who sells food and basic supplies. He says some people no longer open their shops due to low demand. Patronage is at its lowest level. Sani says instead of shopping, people come to the shop to borrow money to eat. Some shops have been closed since the border closure, Sani says. Another shop owner, Muhammad Adamu, says the sanctions have caused commodities prices to skyrocket. Adamu says the cost of living has soared and commodities prices have tripled. He said that the price of rice had gone up to about 3,000 naira, which is equivalent to $4.6. from 1,000 naira, which is equivalent to $1.3, and that the Nigerian border communities seem to be more affected by the sanctions than people in Niger, he added. Nigerian inflation has been rising for years and currently sits at nearly 23%. That is putting some commodities beyond the reach of the poor, according to the country's National Bureau of Statistics.
Malam Bala Salisu is the Information Commissioner for the border state of Katsina.
Government is doing all arrangements to ensure that it makes life easy for the good people of Katsina State, particularly those living along the border communities. And already government has purchased grains worth millions of naira that are distributed freely.
Bashir Adini, Acting Comptroller General of the Nigerian Customs Service, insists the border closure is it's worth the financial risks given the security concerns.
Sometimes you also have to look at the other side of it, and that is the fact that for this economic relations to thrive, you also need to frame them within an atmosphere of peace and security. And when this is absent, we may have problems. So we need to strike a balance between the two.
With the ECOWAS activating its standby force, residents of this border community are not only concerned about their livelihood, but also their safety and security. Al-Hassan Bala, VOA News, Magamajibia, Nigeria.
Tunisian new Prime Minister Ahmed Al-Hassani recently met with the Minister of Economy and Trade of Libya's Government of National Unity, Mohamed Al-Hawij. High on their agenda was developing economic and trade relations and increasing the volume of trade between the two countries. As a result, they have announced an African trade transit corridor. Khalid Chouket, former Tunisian Minister of Parliamentary Affairs, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shenawi whether the moves could help ease the economic squeeze in Tunisia.
It's difficult to say that this will help Tunisia find a solution to its at least. First, the political instability that characterizes the situation in the two countries. As known, the Government of National Unity in Libya is a temporary government, and the Tunisian government is a weak government headed by a man without any experience or international relations. The second reason, increasing trade exchange between the two countries, if it happens, can contribute to reducing the trade deficit in Tunisia. But it is difficult to contribute to solving the dilemma of public finances. Thirdly and finally, there are many contradictions between the leadership of the two countries, especially the regional alliances, which makes these understandings of a formal kind that does not deeply affect bilateral relations.
Libya's Minister of Economy and Trade, Mohamed Al-Hawij, and his Tunisian counterpart, Kulthoum bin Rajab, announced the new proposal named the African Trade Transit Corridor. The new project would open new transit routes from Libya and Tunisia to sub-Saharan African countries to expand the horizon of cooperation and trade. What's your take on that?
These proposals seem great, as this road can be shortened for Tunisian product. However, this proposal does not seem practical soon, as all African Sahel countries are today in civil wars, military coups, and confrontation with the terrorist groups, which makes this road unsafe at present. While Tunisia and Libya appear to be in dire need of such transcontinental project, everyone agrees on the importance of the African continent, especially its important market. But unfortunately, the distance between the dream and the reality seems big, and it requires a role at the level of presidents, not ministers.
Tunisian President Kais Saied appointed his new Prime Minister Ahmed Al-Hashani to find solution to the Tunisian economic crisis. What could the new Prime Minister do differently to ease the economic squeeze?
The Prime Minister is merely a secretary for the President. His role is very limited. And for this reason, I believe that his nomination was a great surprise to the impression that he is not an economist. His job in the central bank managing human resources. And there is nothing in his CV that deserves mention. So that it is said that he is not able to find solution to the economic crisis.
That was Khalid Chouket, former Tunisian Minister of Parliamentary Affairs. He was speaking to VOA's Mohamed Al-Shenawi. Elliot Masote is a professor of business at Devery University in Ohio. He just returned from an extended visit to Harare a few weeks ago. He says people are excited about the coming election in Zimbabwe. In the first part of my conversation with the professor, he talks about the differences between ZANU-PF's Emmerson Mnangagwa, the incumbent, and his challenger, the Citizens Coalition for Change's candidate, Nelson Chamisa. First, he starts by describing how Zimbabwe's presidential and parliamentary election system functions and how it is perceived by the citizens.
Well, these are called harmonized elections that are done every 5 years. And, you know, they include local authorities and, you know, councillors from the rural areas all the way to the cities, the members of parliament and senators all the way to presidential elections. So it's a very big election season in Zimbabwe, election time in Zimbabwe. They can be a very hot one where, you know, emotions, political emotions go really high. And, you know, the preparation itself, it starts couple of months or even years before then, you know, from individual political parties trying to choose who is going to represent them when it gets to harmonized elections. So there are conflicts that can be found in both parties and between political parties as well in preparation for such, you know, a huge election in a country like Zimbabwe.
So it's something very big. But another thing I noticed is it's also very expensive. Presidential candidates forking out, what, $20,000 to appear on the ballot. And parliamentary candidates pay about $2,000.
Yeah, it's really much expensive. And it shows that those with such type of money are the ones who are always going to, you know, to win. And they're always going to afford that type of money, afford also expenses in campaigning, even if they do not have leadership qualities, which means, you know, such a political landscape may, you know, is likely not to be fair because it leaves the poor people who may be talented in leadership. So if you don't have money, even if you are talented, even if people like you, you are not going to have the chance to contest elections. And that puts, you know, some question marks on what type of democracy can that be when it is charged for one to contest elections, unlike previous elections where it was free for anybody to be on the ballot as long as you are going to have certain number of signatures when you file your interest to contest political parties. So it's a concern, and hopefully it's going to be addressed so that not only those with such type of money will be able to contest, but opening up, you know, the political landscape to everybody.
So money is a way of filtering out the poor, huh?
Exactly. And that puts question marks on the type of democracy that it can be called a false democracy then. It doesn't involve everybody. It involves only those with money to be the ruling class and those without money to always be ruled.
So let's talk about the leading candidates, ZANU PF's Emmerson Mnangagwa, the incumbent, Citizens Coalition for Change's Nelson Chamisa, frontrunners. Talk to us about these two leading candidates.
Yeah, these are, you know, totally different opposite candidates looking at their ages as well. You know, President Mnangagwa is over 8 years old and Chamisa is in his 40s, and the experience is also different, even though both of them are lawyers. But, you know, looking at who is who here, you know, Chamisa is so popular with the young people who are unemployed, who are, you know, appealing to somebody who is close to them in terms of age, somebody who is close to them in terms of feeling the impact of such type of tough economy on people. And they have lost trust in the old guard who have been in power ever since 1980. And so the young people feel disconnected to the old political parties and PF and its old candidate as well. And, you know, there are some vote buying, but looking at Chamisa himself, he's coming from a fractured opposition party landscape where that can weaken him. And ZANU-PF seem to be kind of united and with a message that a country is built by its owners. When we look at President Chamisa, he's just talking about the poor economy that has been in that state and maybe getting worse for some people for a number of years, but he's failing really to say how.
That was Elliot Masote, a professor of business at Devry University. He spoke with me from the U.S. state of Ohio. The start of the rainy season in Sudan and neighboring Chad is making it difficult to deliver aid to refugees from Sudan's war. In this report from the Chadian town of Ad-Nur, reporter Henry Wilkins looks at some of the logistical challenges faced by those trying to deliver aid and talks to experts about how Sudan's failed planting season means a desperate food emergency could likely get even worse.
Mohamed Kames fled western Darfur, where rights groups say atrocities against civilians are taking place, around 2 months ago. He arrived in Ad-Nur, Chad, close to the Sudan border, where he thought he would be safe. He says upon his arrival there was a sense of security and safety, but after the floods brought by the rainy season, homes were inundated and there's a severe scarcity of food. Sudan and Chad's rainy season peaks in August and September. It's making access to Ad-Nur very difficult for aid groups. VOA was only able to reach the refugee site in these amphibious all-terrain vehicles operated by the UN. Conventional vehicles like this truck carrying food aid to Ad-Nur become stuck in thick mud, attempts to rescue them unsuccessful. Ibrahim Mohamed Abdallah, a refugee who arrived 2 weeks ago, says the isolation in Ad-Nur makes him frightened.
We have no security there. You know, we have no men there alone. And even we are friends totally. That's why we also come to the border of Chad. I need help. I don't want to stay there because here is also, you know, it's very dangerous, my children.
Lack of access is not the only problem the rainy season brings. Humanitarians say its arrival also marks a grim milestone for Sudan. David Del Conte is a humanitarian and policy consultant who works with aid group Refugees International.
For much of Sudan, the planting season is over. All along the River Nile would be the planting season for much of the country's staples. So the situation in Sudan is such that we have a problem today that will be much bigger tomorrow.
Khartoum and its surrounding area, which sits at the confluence of the Blue and White Nile rivers, has been rocked by fighting between the Sudanese military and the paramilitary rapid support forces, making it almost impossible for farmers to plant. To add to his woes, members of Mohamed Kames's family are still unaccounted for. He does not know if they are able to escape Sudan, if they are alive or dead.
Specifically my aunts and brothers. We have been unable to locate them.
For the refugees of Ad-Nur, the unfolding tragedy, at least for the moment, has no end in sight. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ad-Nur, Chad.
More than 60 migrants are feared dead after a Spanish fishing vessel rescued their struggling boat off the Atlantic archipelago of Cape Verde. Authorities and migrant advocates today said the boat originally had more than 100 people abroad. An official for the International Organization for Migration says 7 bodies were found on the boat and an estimated 56 people are missing at sea and presumed dead. Senegal's Foreign Affairs Ministry reported 38 people were rescued earlier. In the week near Cape Verde, about 620 kilometers off the coast of West Africa. The boat carrying the migrants left Senegal on July 10th and the Spanish fishing vessel found it this month. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nicole Peters, and our engineer, Keila Williams, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.